Welcome to Sounding Board Parenting, creating healthier human connections to the commonality of parenting, exploring the world of parenting with high-performing mums and dads from a range of backgrounds, industries, and family dynamics. This week's guest is Jesse Parker, who I'm stoked to announce as our first repeat guest after first appearing in episode 2. Jesse opens up a few cans of worms in our chat, including the reality of parenting during a pandemic, having different parenting styles to her husband, Kane, along with how her journey with conscious parenting first began and the life of a startup podcaster. Let's jump in. So much has happened since we had you on Sounding Board Parenting last time. Everything from one of the world's worst natural disasters with the bushfires, and we're currently talking in a pandemic. What's changed for you since we last chatted?
Oh, so to be fair, the bushfires were devastating. We luckily weren't affected in WA as much. But I contributed to a lot of the fundraising that was going on with that, because it was just unbelievable really to see what was going on. And in our own country, is quite unfathomable. But yeah, I guess since the COVID situation, it's been pretty interesting. My husband was working on a tourist boat, so he got a new job on a tourist boat. His official role was the first mate, so they kind of are a backup to the skipper, I suppose, and doing that sort of thing. And so tourism went down the toilet, like a lot of jobs did. So he had to stop working. And being a nurse, I was in the fortunate position where there was enough work. So I went back to work, and I've been working for the last sort of month since he lost his job. And with the tourism job he was doing, they sort of operate seasonally, so that he was going to be locked into this job till around October, when they shut down, and they do sort of Midwest tours, and then they do Kimberley tours in WA. So they just had to make the call to cancel basically all their tours, because they didn't know the forecast of this pandemic. And yeah, so he was pretty devastated, because he had a bit of a game plan in life about he was doing the job mainly to get the sea time to do his next master's ticket, which has a name that I can never remember. It used to be called your Master 3, but I don't know what it's called now. And yeah, so that kind of all fell in a bit of a heap. He didn't need that much more sea time, so he was sort of trying to work out what to do. And I think, to be honest, he didn't cope very well with everything that's going on, and he was quite hard to be around at home, and it brought up a lot of stuff. I think these sort of situations do, like when you put in these high pressure situations, especially where you're like in each other's space 24/7 with your two kids who are also going a bit mental. So it actually brought up a lot of recurring arguments and issues for us, and we've had to do a lot of work to sort of get through them. And we're actually going to a couples counsellor next week, to be honest, to talk them out. And like, I'm kind of excited to go, because these are things, and I find that a lot of relationships are quite similar, that they're arguments that come up again and again and again. And I think they do that for a reason, because you haven't sorted them out. You know, things will resurface when you haven't sorted them out. So there's definitely been a lot of resurfacing, and I've been doing a lot of work on myself in the last few months. So I feel like it's really hard when you're doing a lot of work on yourself and you're not, and your partner's, not that he's not, but maybe not to the same extent I was. And you kind of need someone that you can evolve with. And I felt like I was facing and confronting a lot of my negative core beliefs that I've had for like, you know, ever, and wanting to sort of learn how to move through them. And it became apparent to me that there was a lot of things perhaps he wasn't working through. And now that I was sort of learning a lot more about myself, I wasn't really going to be here for all those things that he wasn't prepared to examine and work through. So there was maybe a bit of intolerance on my part as well. But again, we've been together for a very long time, so it was probably a lot of built up, maybe resentment as well from all the years we've been together. So we're just trying to figure it out, really. But it's been full on.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. This change, it seems to have brought a lot of these feelings to the surface for a lot of people, whether it be in family dynamics like we're talking about now. What other challenges have you faced throughout these changing times?
Well, I was actually really surprised with work. So when I was going to go back to work, I was offered a contract because they're giving out a lot of, as you might have known, there was a huge recruitment pool in WA Health to do a contract for this COVID period. And I don't know how long the contracts are for, they're just short term. And I thought that was perhaps a good idea. And Kane was sort of against a contract because in case anything came up for him, he wanted to be able to go back to work. And I didn't want to deal with the headache of working while he was away. So, but there's just been, so I'm kept working casually, but there was just a massive downturn in casual work. Some of the hospitals have actually said there's no casual work for their nurses, and others are just like, yeah, really slim pickings. And
how does that work with the demands of what's taking place?
Well, we're in this really unique position in WA because we're preparing for this surge of patients like they've had overseas and like, you know, in places like Italy, Spain, New York, all the really hard affected places. And so they have to prepare. So in order to prepare, you have to recruit a lot of staff, and they cancelled non-essential elective surgery. So that meant a lot of nurses in private hospitals were also looking for work because a lot of their work was gone, because a lot of private hospitals operate on elective surgery mainly as they're getting people in the door and out the door. So they would have had a massive downturn in presentations, and then that means there's not enough work for them. And to the point that a lot of ward beds have closed, like they've closed a lot of the wards that are elective surgery based. So then those staff also don't have work. So they have to put them somewhere else, or they have to go on leave. You've also got staff that maybe had leave booked, and obviously they can't go away anymore, so they're like, oh, I'll just keep working while I can because there's nothing else to do. So a lot of people aren't taking their leave that they had booked originally, and so you just end up with this surplus of nurses. And because we haven't had the presentations that they have had overseas, they haven't been needed, because if it was that same situation, you would need all these people. They would be setting up even more things, and they would need the nurses and they need the other healthcare workers and frontline staff. But we haven't had that spike of presentations like they have, or like cases that they have worldwide. So we're kind of just waiting. We're not standing down. But, yeah, it just means in the meantime there's no work. So it was quite surprising. I feel super fortunate. Like, I have a good relationship with my old workplace, and I've been able to book shifts through them. But again, they're kind of at the point where they're overstaffed at the moment. So I only get what, like, I did a night shift a couple of nights ago because that's all that what there was. But they're actually doing this trial now, which you might have read about. It's called the Brace Trial, and it's giving healthcare workers, alongside their flu vax, they're going to have the BCG vaccine, which is something that they used to give people for TB. And so they've started this big trial just to see. They think there could be a link between BCG providing like a boosted immunity. And so they obviously don't know. They want to do a trial about it with healthcare workers in relation to COVID. Yep. So they've got these clinics set up now where they're doing this research. So because I have my immunisation certification, I've been able to pick up a lot of work there. So that was super lucky as well. So, I mean, we're still like churning, but that has been like quite surprising in all of this as well.
It's a challenging time, and obviously touching on the healthcare side of things. I think I mentioned last time, my mum's actually a nurse, and it was only a couple of weeks ago she gave me a call and let me know that she was placed into one of the COVID wards here in WA. And it's interesting to get that different perspective of how much this change has affected the healthcare system in that way, and how it's going to affect it, not only in the midst of it like we are right now, but heading into the future as well in terms of changing systems, how we prepare for these things. It's, I mean, hats off to everyone out there, including yourself, that are diving into that front line, because I'm sure it can be scary at times, but it's awesome to see so many people like yourself jumping in to be able to play a part as well.
It's actually super interesting though. Like, there's something that this is just my own personal opinion, but the hospital has been inundated with donations, like people donating a lot of food, doing anything for healthcare workers. In WA particularly, like, I've been working mainly in emergency lately, and you obviously have the sections that are for query COVID or COVID patients, so you operate differently. You have to wear the PPE and stuff, and there's not enough of it, so they changes the way you nurse. But there's not been as many presentations, which is great, because people are staying home and realising that, you know, if it's not urgent, they don't need to go to ED at the moment. But I feel like I worked the flu season last year, which was particularly bad flu season in emergency, and it was horrible. Like, it was, and I was like, it's kind of ironic, we're getting all these donations now and like all this recognition, but I feel like nurses, is particularly in ED and like actually just in the hospital system in general, bust their ass like 24/7 every day. And like, I kind of felt a bit sad that it took a pandemic for people to be like, you deserve it, because I feel like they're always so deserving. Like, it's so nice that people are being so generous and appreciative. Like, it's lovely. But I kind of feel like it'd be nice maybe in the flu season when it's the middle of winter and there's the presentations just sore then. There's just so many shifts that you leave feeling completely and emotionally and physically drained. And I know that it's felt across the board in nursing, not just in emergency. And like, it'd be so good if people understood that as well, I think, like, outside of the pandemic.
What do you think the reason for that is? I have a personal opinion, but I'm interested to know, why do you think it's at this time and not every other flu season?
I guess people kind of take for granted the healthcare system, but also if it was as bad as, say, in New York or Italy, it would be really horrendous as well. Like, so people are like, and you see photos, you see media from around the world, and it is bad. It's not great. So I think that people are thinking, oh my God, this is what it's going to be like here, which it definitely, you know, it was looking like it was going to be the same here. So I think that's why they feel like, yeah, the need to what's the word, like, show their support, I suppose.
Totally, because it's in their faces 24/7 at the moment in terms of what we are seeing through all forms of media. Mm. You mentioned before around some of the struggles with obviously the change and having to be, I suppose, change routine, change the family dynamics in quite a big way, like a lot of people are, I'm sure. Have you learnt anything new about yourself as a parent through this period?
Oh my God. I have been going to a psychologist recently anyway, and I was so glad when this all happened that I had someone there to like bounce these things off. And the reason I started going to a psychologist is because it was mainly around parenting, different aspects of parenting. Like, my kids, like Billy, my daughter, is turning 6 in a few months, so she's 5. And I just noticed she was responding a lot more to the way I was, and I didn't want her to take, I just didn't want to cause any trauma to her unnecessarily, because I hadn't dealt with my own stuff. So I just wanted to start to figure that stuff out. And obviously then in the meantime, this has all happened. So it's been such a great resource to have. Like, I just think everyone should see a psychologist, and someone that they really vibe with. I really like the one that I'm seeing. And I think I always just was a bit of a, I didn't have a good perspective of myself, like just in terms of my self-confidence and my self-esteem and what I thought of myself. And I'm starting to, so obviously how that transferred to parenting is I thought I was a terrible parent and I was doing the wrong thing all the time. And like, I just didn't know what I was doing. And my kids are going to have all this trauma because I just don't have my shit together. But I actually realized that I have lots of good qualities. There's lots of things that I'm doing right. It's actually been quite good for me. And I guess this period with COVID and having to homeschool, and I find it just incredibly frustrating, and I'm not super patient with them. And I would totally beat myself up about that in the past. Like, I'm horrible. And don't get me wrong, there's still days when I feel like I'm just failing as a mum. But I've just learned to be a bit more gentle with myself and have a bit more self-compassion, because it's not everyone is cut out for, not everyone's the same, and not everyone can have the same attitudes and feel the same towards doing certain things. And I know that there's other areas that I would perhaps thrive in that other people wouldn't. So I just need to cut myself some slack in this situation. And I guess with my husband as well, because we clash a lot over everything, but we clash a lot over parenting because we've got very different parenting styles. And I guess because he kind of thinks he's right, I don't think I would say that I thought I was right, but I didn't agree with what he was doing or wanted to do. It created this like dynamic and sort of constant diatribe between us about parenting, and it just gave me a lot more confidence to stand up for myself and not always be the one compromising on what I want as a parent and for my kids. So that's been pretty good as well. So I think it's, even though it's been really challenging, it's been a lot of good stuff that's come out of it for me.
That's awesome. What do you think the reason is for disagreeing with Kane on those different areas? You mentioned the difference in styles. I'd love to dive into that a little bit more. Like, what are the differences that you find are most prominent?
He just wants to have a lot more control over the kids. Like, he's quite strict, I suppose, is a good way of saying it. If they, in old school parenting, he would have been giving them the strap or whatever people used to do. Like, you know, if you talk back, you get a strap. If you do this, he doesn't hit the kids or smack the kids. He would just put them in timeout constantly because they're not listening to him because they're little kids, and little kids don't often listen. So I think that he sees them not listening as like something's going wrong here. We're not parenting them properly. I see it as them just being typical kids, really, and you have to learn to work with what you got. So I'm much more, I would say, like, in a non-hippie woo-woo way, I'm a conscious parent, in the sense that I don't want my kids to be an extension of myself, and I'm really aware of that. So I try not to push my own insecurities or my own values onto them. Like, if they want to do something their way, I want to support them and embrace them in that. But I'd say he's more like, he just kind of is going off the template he knows as a parent, which was more authoritarian. And sometimes I feel like he's a soldier and he wants them to be his little soldiers. And I just don't agree with it, because I want my kids to have, I want them to have space to express themselves emotionally, however that is, whether it's like negative emotions or positive emotions. And I feel like when you try and tell them what to do all the time, you kind of limit their ability to recognize different emotions. And yeah, I don't know. That's where we clash a lot.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page with you on that. It was actually yesterday I was doing some more reading, and I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Justin Coulson.
I don't think so.
He's honestly a leader in this conscious parenting space in terms of research, and I'd love to circle back to that topic a little bit later on as well. He talks about it exactly the way you just mentioned it, in the form of working and talking with your children, not at them anymore, because that is that difference. It's from that traditional sort of way of parenting, which has been ingrained into us for years generations, centuries, it's about do as I say, not as I do, which in my personal opinion, I think that phrase, that saying is absolutely backwards. Because I think it's been proven now over and over, kids aren't wired at that age to follow instructions the way that you expect them to. They're actually going to follow your actions and your behaviors more than anything. And if they see someone that is constantly telling them what to do and not providing them maybe the choice or the input, it's interesting to see what that could correlate to later in life when dealing with situations of stress or overwhelm.
Yeah, and I guess that's why I wanted to go and see someone about it, because I knew that it didn't matter what I said to them. If I'm doing something completely the opposite, it's not going to connect for them and it will probably just confuse them. So I wanted to sort out myself and my triggers, because the only reason I was like losing my shit at them is because I was getting triggered by their behavior. So it was all to do with me. So I'm definitely not like there yet, like enlightenment, but I feel like I'm getting, like I'm on the path to feeling, I don't know, like I'm more of the parent that I want to be.
I'm hearing a lot of awareness come through, which I reckon is awesome in itself. So I definitely, from parent to parent, commend you for that, because I think that's one of the hardest things to do, is to get over that barrier of just bringing awareness to what's going on internally. It's so easy for us to, I suppose, look externally and say it's because of A, B, and C, when 9 times out of 10, that's just plucking a stat out of the air. It's usually something going on inside of us.
Yeah, 100%. 100% agree. And I think it does take a lot to look at those parts of yourself. Like, it's confronting and it's uncomfortable. Totally. And you don't want to acknowledge sometimes that you're so messed up. Because, like, I had such a great childhood. I have lovely, loving and, like, great parents and family. And you kind of think, I kind of went through a stage where I was like, why do I have all these issues? Like, I had such a good life. I've had such a good life, you know, but it just, trauma like presents itself and like lodges itself in your psyche in ways beyond our control. Just like some kids that are exposed to horrible things don't have lasting effects from it, whereas others might, or, you know, some kids are exposed to something that wouldn't affect them that affects others. Like, and that's just what's happened. And it's like you said, I think you just have to be an observer of yourself and for a while and recognize like, oh, this is what I'm doing. Like, that's really interesting. And like then kind of figuring out where that came from and reprogramming and reprocessing things, which is where you, like, I've obviously used like a professional to help with that because I didn't know where to start.
Totally, and adversity doesn't discriminate. And then you've got the whole topic that we could probably dive into it at some point in terms of genetic predisposition. Like every one of us, whether we like it or not, it's been proven now that the deepest contributor to our character and to our personality is genetic predisposition. We are born with traits that we have no control over. So some of us might be more more disposed to depression. Some of us might be more disposed to optimism. There's all these different traits out there. And then you've got the whole, okay, what environment have you been a part of as a child? And then there's still obviously opportunity to reshape and shape that as adults as well. There's a lot of uncontrollables out there. So I love what you're talking about in terms of being able to just be an observer of yourself and those around you instead of just constantly doing.
Yeah.
Being able to stop, reflect and be for a bit as well. And honestly, I've actually through this period, I've found Oscar to be the one constant. I call him a presence trigger. There's only a couple of things that can actually bring me back into the present straight away, and one of those is Oscar. And whether it's, I mean, we've had some epic fun like throughout this period, whether it's building a cubby. We went camping in the backyard over Easter, playing Chasey out the backyard, whatever it's been, he's honestly one of those presence triggers for myself. And I'd love to know, like, what have you guys still been able to find that time to muck around with the kids, with each other? Like, how are you going in that sense throughout this period?
Yeah, I think that it took time. Yeah, so I feel like it took a while for, like, the dust to settle, because I was suddenly – Kane was meant to be literally gone for a long time, like, on and off till October. I'd sort of gotten into the headspace that I was going to be at home and this is what I'm going to be doing. Then in a matter of days, because I actually got to go up on the last trip that they did. And when we were coming home, obviously before he left, they said, look, we can't employ you anymore. We can't do any more tours. So it had to lay off all their staff. And he was like, well, I guess you're going to have to go back to work. But it was still really unknown. Like, I suppose everyone felt the same. We didn't really know what was going on. And then suddenly I was going back to work. And to be honest, I didn't want to go back to the hospital at all. Like, I'd really emotionally checked out of that job. So I could have gone and found another job, but I kind of just went back to what was easy. And I'm really glad that I did, because I've been loving catching up with all my colleagues and friends that I work with. And sorry, I can hear Jacob still like yelling at the iPad. So then I felt like, and with nursing, you can never really get into a groove, especially when you're casual, because your shifts aren't the same every day. You're not working the same days. You know, sometimes you do a night shift. I find it like sometimes quite physically draining, emotionally draining. So I felt like it was really hard to get into any sort of routine. I didn't feel super patient when they were homeschooling. When they're at home, I didn't feel like I had the patience for it. So I felt like we had to learn what worked, and that was kind of short bursts of schooling rather than sitting down for hours and like smashing it out. And yeah, it's been a good lesson in things like taking the kids, doing simple things. Like, often I will take them in the car somewhere and do something with them, but just getting on their scooters and going for a walk, like around the suburbs. We've been trying to teach Billy how to ride without a training wheels, which we probably wouldn't have had time to do because Kane wouldn't have been home and there was no way I was doing it by myself. And Billy and the kids have said things to me which kind of warms my heart. Like, we were just going on a scooter. We did this huge scooter ride. I kind of underestimated how hard it would be. And they were just, it was quite hot. So anyway, but they, on the way there, they were loving it. Not so much on the way home. And Billy was said, oh, I bet you no one else is having as much fun as us with the coronavirus. Because she was just like loving life, because they love spending time with us and doing things that we wouldn't normally do, just because you want to get out of the house and do something together.
And possibly the coolest thing you can hear as a parent.
Yeah, but it kind of made me feel a little bit sad, like, oh, I wish you always felt this way, you know, like I wish I made more of an effort all the time. And because I kind of feel like you have to make an effort at the moment because there's no other opportunities to go out and do other things.
Time for a short reflection break. This is an opportunity for you to stop, take a breath, and reflect on your past week as a parent. If you have a pen and paper near you, that's great. If not, simply use your phone or laptop. I want you to write down three things. First, write down one moment in the past week that you were proud of yourself as a parent. Second, write down one area of your parenting that you would like to improve for the next week. Third, write down one moment from the past week where your child or children have made you smile. Be kind to yourself and enjoy the rest of the podcast. Before we take a sharp left out of the pandemic talk.
Yeah.
I'd love to know from your point of view, for those parents out there that are potentially currently struggling with the changes as well, if you could just throw out one piece of advice or just something that you'd like them to know, what would it be from your point of view?
In terms of just like inspo or like how to keep going or.
Yeah, anyone, like anything that comes to mind from your point of view, whether it be a mum, a dad, a family, what would you like to tell them if you could?
I think this time has been a lesson in like radical acceptance of life, because it's one of those things you cannot bury your head in the sand and wait to pass, because it's, I think we're so used to things popping up, especially in media. Things pop up, like some big controversial thing, then it kind of just goes away. And this has been one of the only things that hasn't really gone away, apart from like Donald Trump becoming president. That just never went away either. But I think for me, it was like that quote, if you can't change it, change your attitude. That's something that's kind of been a bit of a mantra, because we literally can't change anything about what's going on, but you can change the way you think about it. So that's helped me get through. Not to say there's not days when I feel like I'm going to implode, like I'll go insane. Like I just feel like I feel so restless. I just want to run out of the house screaming. But it's definitely helped me see, like, I can't change this. It's not going to be forever. I just need to change the way I'm looking at it. And it has been really good for that, because you do look for opportunities then during the day to make the most of it.
Appreciate you sharing that. Last podcast, you definitely came across as someone who is striving for that conscious parenting, and you mentioned it before as well. I'm interested to know how your journey with conscious parenting came about and how it's been evolving. I think you touched on it before, but I'd love to know how that journey began.
How did it begin? Because I don't know. When I had kids, like when they were babies, I didn't think about parenting in the slightest. Like obviously I was keeping them alive, and I actually quite enjoyed the newborn phase. Like I find it harder when there's more demand, you know, like in terms of emotional demand, because like physically they're demanding as newborns, but emotionally they didn't really need too much from me except for my cuddles and love. And I found that quite easy to give. But I don't know when it changed to, I don't remember there being like a pivotal moment where I thought like I need to, but I guess I have a lot of empathy as a person, and that translates to my kids as well. And just when you see them hurting, and it actually maybe was kind of school starting, because at school they start to do a lot of things like, I'm trying to think of examples, like they start to do things like running races and things where they can get disappointed if they lose. And I realized I was feeling nervous for my kids. Like I was like, oh my God, I don't want her to like feel sad if this happens. And it made me kind of check myself, like, oh, I can't control what happens to her. That's my own anxieties coming to the surface about if it was me. So I need to teach, like, Billy, because she's my eldest, like she needs to, I want her to be resilient, so that, and how do I like foster resilience in her if I'm feeling like I want to protect her and change things for her? And because I was thinking about it from my perspective, like what I would want, which wasn't necessarily what she needs or wants. So that's kind of, I think, what really triggered it was perhaps starting school, and thinking like, okay, I've got like there's a long school life ahead of us here. You know, like how long do kids go to school for? Like 11 years or something? 12 years?
Yeah,
it'd
be like 11 or 12.
Yeah, 12 years. So I was like, if I don't deal with this stuff now, it's going to get worse as she gets older. And then especially when you throw in like teenage emotions and problems that come with, you know, stress, you know, things just evolve and change, like ages and stages, there's all different ones. But yeah, so I guess it kind of made me think I needed to, I can't be projecting all my stuff onto her and wanting her to live a life that I see as okay. I have to be okay with the choices she makes and the things that happen to her within reason. I need to allow them to happen. And I can't do that if I'm getting triggered by everything that's going on in her life and I want to try and control it. So I guess that's what kind of led me down the path of, I didn't know it was like conscious parenting. I listened to a really good podcast it's the Motherkind podcast, and I can't remember the name of the doctor. She interviewed someone that had done a lot of research about this thing, and I thought it sounded really like hippie, and I don't know, I didn't want to listen to it. Yeah, and then one of my friends said, no, I really liked it. Like, I really liked it. And I listened to it and I just loved it. And I was like, wow, that's the kind of parent I want to be. Like, I don't want to live vicariously through my kids. I want to watch them, you know, and support them and encourage them. But I don't want them to do things. Like, Billy said something to me like, do you feel proud of me when she did something? And I was like, I'm always proud of you. You know, I didn't want her to feel like she needed this validation from me all the time. Or she says she did something so that I would feel proud of her. And it made me feel a little bit sad, to be honest. And I was like, I'm always proud of you. And so there's just things like that have popped up and, yeah, made me think about what I really want.
I'd love to dive into a couple of things that we touched on in the last podcast that had some interest from listeners, if that's okay.
Yeah, totally.
So the first one was around when you were talking about going through pregnancy for the first time and that feeling initially of just being able to announce it, get the family involved and start creating that community. I'd love to know, because I think after that you mentioned you would do it differently now, just after some of the other stories that you've heard in terms of when to announce a pregnancy and other stories that you've heard around that. I'd love to sort of dive into why you would do it differently now and get your opinion on that.
There's a few reasons. I think that firstly, there's like whatever feels right. Like maybe if I had got pregnant again, I wouldn't feel like I wanted to do it differently. I don't really know. I'm quite, like, my husband and I are quite impulsive and wear our heart on our sleeve type of people. So I can imagine that perhaps there would be a thought like, oh, let's just tell everybody. But I did notice between my first and second pregnancies, the first one, because I didn't have any kids already that were keeping me busy, I was like, it's all I thought about all the time. I had the app on my phone that showed me how big the baby was. I was checking in with it like every day and hadn't changed. And I'd be so stoked when I hit like another week. So I think I was just super excited because I wasn't that busy in my life at the time. And also Cain was away a lot. So I didn't even really have him there to share it with a lot. Sorry if you can hear the chaos. My dog's barking, now the kids are yelling.
That's okay. I love it. It's all things.
they're being neglected. Yeah, and I think then when the second time around... Sorry, I felt like it wasn't preoccupying as much of my time because I was busy. I felt busy with Billy, and maybe because I'd been through it before, I knew a bit more what to expect. And like, I remember going to like my 20-week scan or whatever it is, you have your anatomy scan midway through, and feeling like, crap, where'd that last like 4 months go or 5 months go? It just felt like it went so quickly. And then all of a sudden, the last week felt like it went forever, but the rest of it went really quickly. So I think I just wouldn't, because it wouldn't preoccupy as much of my thoughts as it did with like my first pregnancy. But also because I've had a lot of, we've grown up a lot and there's been a lot of friends and family that have been through a lot of loss or had really like, shit circumstances in pregnancy, that's just given me a bit of perspective like, oh, we've been super lucky, I guess, like with our two pregnancies going really smoothly, we didn't really have any complications at all, and I've never even had a miscarriage, so like I don't understand that sort of that type of loss, so it's given me a little bit more understanding, I suppose, about that. I also just, the kind of person I am is that I like to talk about everything. So I do feel like if that was to happen to me, I would want to talk about it because I like to talk about everything. And I just, doesn't mean I'd want to necessarily tell everybody, but I know that I'd want to talk it out. So yeah, that would come into consideration for me as well in telling people early. But with Jacob, we just waited. God, I don't even know if we officially like told everybody, like we didn't Facebook announce it. Some people just would message me and say like, are you pregnant? You look like you're pregnant. I don't want to be rude, you know, like, but it was quite obvious that I was pregnant. So it was a bit different. And it also kind of made it a bit awkward though, when I was like, oh yeah, here's a baby that we just had. And they're like, didn't even know you were pregnant.
Really? Were there people at both ends of the scale with?
I'm talking about people like on Facebook and stuff that we did. Because I don't think we posted it on there that I was having, that we were having another baby. I can't remember. Whereas with Billy, it was like, oh, I'm so excited. Like, this is happening. But I honestly don't even know how I'd be next time. If there is a next time.
Do you think there'll be a next time?
Yeah.
That's awesome. You mentioned before around Kane's work situation, and last time in the podcast you talked about the FIFO life as well for a family. I'd love to learn a little bit more about that in terms of, one, what you learnt about yourself as a parent throughout that period, and some of the challenges that you faced along the way through that journey as well, having a partner that works fly in, fly out.
So I think FIFO was the catalyst for me, like apart from having kids, that forced me to look inward at myself, because I was by myself a lot of the time and was dealing with all these emotions, and it wasn't related to him because he wasn't here. You know, I felt like I was really unhappy at times in FIFO, and yeah, that didn't force me to see if it was things I was doing, which it was sometimes as well. Like, it wasn't just because he was away all the time. It was the way I was thinking. It was good for that reason. I think like the principles of having like a successful FIFO relationship is what is like successful for every relationship, in my opinion, is that you really have to work together. You have to be on like the same team. And the times when the wheels fallen off for us are when we've had conflicting ideas, we've had conflicting opinions about what we want to do, and when the other hasn't felt supported by, we haven't felt supported by each other, that's when stuff's gone, just been really hard, I suppose, and we've argued a lot. I guess, like, I always knew with Kane his job was probably going to be FIFO, because when he started looking at the kind of career trajectory he wanted, it was sort of in the field that he's in now. It's a commercial diving and boating, like skippering, and he did a lot of mining work, and like he always kind of said that the work he wanted to do would probably be offshore or up north or wherever. So I knew from the beginning he was going to be doing FIFO. So I think it made it a little bit easier because it wasn't a shock to the system. Whereas I know some people, their husband will be, have worked in Perth forever, and then they get a FIFO job. And that would be, I think that would be really challenging to just like kind of figure it out together. Everything would feel really new and hard. I feel like Kane's also like quite difficult sometimes, as you might have gathered from all the venting I did earlier. Like when he's feeling something, the whole household's feeling it. Like he has what's the word? Like his face has no filter. So I feel like when he's home sometimes, because I mean, I could just do a whole podcast about Kane, but he's got his own stuff. And when he's home, I find it difficult, because when someone's been away for a long time and they come home, you kind of want the best of them, I suppose. And realistically, you're not going to get that all the time because it's life and people aren't feeling like popping all the time. But I guess it was kind of became this pattern of him coming home and kind of really not liking being at home. And because he's just very routine, very regimented, and he was getting that with his job. And obviously when you've got kids, life is not routine and regimented like every day. I mean, there's some things that you can predict and things that you do the same, but generally every day is like you don't know how it's going to go in terms of how the kids are going to be and what's going to happen and how you're going to feel. I feel like it's very chaotic, especially at the moment. So that the challenge was he was coming home. I was feeling like a bit disappointed, I suppose, in the way he would be when he was home. And then I would almost look forward to him going away again. And I guess awesome when you're FIFO because they can just leave again, but also not a great thing because I think it's a little bit sad that you kind of want your partner to leave. Whereas there used to be a time when I would be like, feel sad and feel like, oh, I'm going to miss you and I don't want you to go away. But it was more like, I think it was because I was feeling like he was encroaching on my, I was taking on board everything he was feeling basically. Like I was looking into it too much and then so then it would make me feel crap and then yeah, so it was just if he's not here it's just like that problem's been removed and we get along a lot better because we're not in each other's space all the time. But I think that also is a product of FIFO because we've been living apart so much that you kind of get used to your own little ways and you forget how to let someone else in again and like consider someone else. So you know, just little things like the way you might stack the dishwasher, they don't do it the same. And then you're like, oh, you don't, I don't put the plates there. We had this exact conversation the other day, actually. And, but I think you have, so you have to exercise a lot of understanding and acceptance. And I have, I honestly haven't been doing that of him. And I think that you need to have that in FIFO because when, so, especially if they're doing big swings, like we were doing, like we 4 weeks away, you do kind of get into a groove. You get, you do things your own way and how things work and you get comfortable. And same with him, he'd be away and this is how things would work for him. So coming together again can be really challenging because, so you have to learn to be a bit more accepting, compromise a lot more. And it's just when you're doing that a lot, it can, if you're not on the same team, it can be just like a bit of a shit fight all the time. Like who's right, fighting about who's right, fighting about whose ideas are better. And that's kind of like the cycle I felt like we got into. So that's why this has been a bit of a blessing in disguise because it's kind of forced us to stay in the same house for starters for like an unknown period of time. And we've had to really hash these things out, which I think is a good thing. I don't know how it's going to work out, but we're definitely in the throes of working it out. That was a really long-winded answer. Sorry.
I love it. And I'm interested to know, do you see a difference in the kids when Kane is away and when Kane is home? And how do you think the kids are about it overall?
So, yeah, I do, definitely. Like anyone that's FIFO, I think, would agree that it kind of does throw a bit of a spanner in the works when your husband's coming and going. And I noticed when he would leave, they would be, like, quite emotional and all over the place. And then also the same when he'd come home because he was away for a long time and he'd come home for a long time. But he is, I always think he's a better parent than me. He's really hands-on. He really has their best interests at heart most of the time. And they, when we're living together harmoniously, the kids, you just see it. They just are like, different kids, then they're not as emotional because we're not as emotional. Like I totally notice a difference in them, which is also why I think we need to like work this stuff out because I want to function more as a team and not argue. I think arguing is normal, like a normal part of life, and I don't think you can always be like, in my opinion, happy families. But I do think constant arguing or like malicious arguing isn't a very helpful thing for kids.
Rolling out, I honestly think you guys with Born 2 are rolling out some epic art. And from what I can see, the What I Know About Motherhood and Business podcast is receiving some cool feedback as well. How's it going from your point of view? You enjoying it?
Thanks, yeah. So I'm really enjoying the art. It's been really fun. I think because when you're used to doing art on like paper or I don't paint myself, but I did a lot of drawing and you transition to digital art, it was like, I didn't think about it much at the time, but it was like, I think I didn't give that enough. I didn't give that enough thought. I was like, why can't I just do everything on this? And I feel like now I'm finally learning. You kind of master one thing at a time on the iPad. There's just so much you can do on it. And now I'm learning and getting more confident in like my abilities on that. I've been really enjoying taking on like more challenging projects that I normally would have been like, no, that's too hard. So I'm really enjoying that. And the podcast, it's been super fun. To be honest, it's had a bit of a hiatus unintentionally. I've got a couple of episodes that I need to post just with work and everything that's going on. I haven't been feeling it as much, so I just haven't updated it. But I really enjoy the podcasting side of it and talking to other women, especially in business. It's just been eye-opening. I think you can learn so much just from listening.
What have you learned from it?
I feel like there's not like one, I can't pick like pick information that has really landed, but I feel like the general, just interviewing different people, I've always thought this, when you talk to someone, you just can learn so much from someone else's perspective. I think there's a lot to say for being yourself. Like people are so frightened to just be themselves because for whatever reason. And I'm just learning more and more that if you are more authentically yourself, then that's where the magic is. And I guess learning to be authentic is like a thing in itself, like recognizing what makes you unique and kind of not living in a place of ego as well, because I do it myself as well. So many of the decisions we make come from a place of ego rather than what you really, really want or what feels like true to you. And it's when you talk to people that are really successful in business or enjoying life, it's when you realize they're because they're not making their decisions based on what other people think or what they think of themselves or whatever. Like they're doing it just because that's what feels good and feels true to them. That's probably what I've picked up a lot from the interviews.
That's cool. I know my partner Jess, she's loving them. So I'll let her know that you've got a couple more episodes coming out soon.
Yeah, awesome.
What are you loving about parenting right now?
What am I loving about parenting right now? I'm loving the opportunity to like be with my kids. Not even from the sense that they aren't at school. I mean, they're technically on holidays now, but I get to choose when I'm in a position where like I can go to things. I mean, not really right now in this pandemic, but in life, I can choose the things that I want to be there for, like, or I can be there for all the things instead of feeling like I have to work. I can work around them, which I really like. I think that's something that is, and I love seeing them. I love seeing them do things that make them happy. So it's pretty cool to be able to be there for things like that and facilitate those moments of happiness sometimes when I have the inclination and energy to get stuck into things with them.
Totally. Jess and I were having this conversation the other day, and it's made us realize that there's changes that have taken place that we found really positive in the form of whether it be working flexibly or having Oscar around more or being around Oscar a lot more. And some of these changes we're now talking about, okay, how do we take that back when this passes, because it will pass at some point, how do we make those changes that we've made as a family stick? And that's been really cool to explore as well together. Like what you guys are describing, there's things that we've learned, whether it's across the world, whether it's as a nation, or whether it's in our little family units, there's things that we've learned that can actually be beneficial and positive moving forward as well, which has been really cool.
Yeah, I think that everyone's going to learn a lot from this period in time. Like, even if you don't consciously, even if you're just so happy to see the back of it, you would have taken so much on board, I think.
There's always progress to be recognised. Mm-hmm. Wrapping up, as we always do, with the time to plug off segment. Mm-hmm. Last time you mentioned how people could get in touch with you, so I'd love for you to plug that again as well. But the second part of this is I'd love for you to share something that's caught your fancy throughout this period, whether it be a book, if you've been reading, podcast, social media, anything. The floor is yours.
Oh, so I'm, or if you just go on social media, I'm at Bournetwo, B-O-R-N-E-T-O-O. I mostly hang out on Instagram, so it's just easy sometimes for people to know that. And then you can find my other website and stuff through there. What's caught my fancy? I've been doing a lot of reading. Like I made a while ago, like years ago, there was this thing, 50 books in a year. Like, so it's like kind of a book a week. I remember it being like a bit of a challenge and I thought, I'm going to do that this year. So I think I'm up to like book number 19 or 20. So I'm making pretty good progress at the moment. I read quite quickly. I'm trying to think of a book that I've read that, like, because there's been some good ones. Do you know what, actually? The book that really landed the most to me was a novel. It's called The Nightingale by Kristen Hannah. And I love novels. I found that if I read a novel before bed, it helps me to switch off, whereas unless it's really good, then I have to, like, finish it. But I just found when I was reading, like, self-help books or business books, it was kind of like I was starting to get ideas about what I wanted to do and then I couldn't shut off. So I kind of save them for during the day and then I read novels at night. And it helps me sleep so much better. But The Nightingale is about it's about Nazi-occupied France during World War II. And The Nightingale is this woman who helped fallen Allied soldiers, so people that had been shot out of the sky and stuff. She helped them escape back to, like, Allied territory, so a bit underground. And I read it actually when this was all unfolding, like the coronavirus thing was unfolding. And it's historical fiction, but I have no doubt that the things that happened in the book probably played out in real life. And it was just horrific. It's as anything to do with the Holocaust and Nazi, you know, occupation of Europe was. And I had to actually read it like a chapter at a time sometimes because it was really intense, like some of the things that happened in it. And I think it's because I knew that these probably happened in real life. And that's why I was like, crap. And it made me feel like super, super lucky that what we're going through means we just have to stay inside and not see people. Because it just made me think about the world wars, and there's not a lot of people around from World War II now that can explain to us how it was and, like, you know, give us that inspiration to keep going. Because for them, I feel like it was way worse. The wars went on for a lot longer. They were living in limbo for a lot longer. They were fearing that their loved ones were dying. I mean, people in this particular novel were seeing their loved ones killed in front of them, and I'm like, geez, this is nothing. Like, this has got nothing on that. And so it actually gave me, because I read it at the start of it, it gave me a lot of perspective moving forward that I was like, all right, this isn't so bad.
That is awesome. We are honestly, we're not the strongest animal in the kingdom. We're not the smartest. We're not the quickest. But one thing I think as humans we are the best at is being able to adapt, is our adaptability. No matter what's been thrown at us, we've been able to come together, and that's probably been the key, is we actually come together throughout periods like this and we can work through it. And I'm definitely going to be diving into The Nightingale at some point. I'm all about history, so I love the thought of being able to dive into that. That's really cool.
It's a really, really good book. There's a lot of really good books like that out there. I've heard, after I'm telling people about it, I've heard of a lot of other ones that I can't think of off the top of my head, but that I've got on my list. I make a list on my iPhone of all the books that I want to read, because it's always good to have some recommendations when you're looking for a new book.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Jessie, for being so open and honest, just like our first podcast together. And I'm really looking forward to getting you back on at some point as well. And I hope you've found this chat to be valuable too.
Yeah, no, it's been great. Thanks for having me again.
Well wishes to yourself, Kane, Billy and Jacob. Thank you so
much. Thanks. I can hear Billy crying in the background again.
Thank you for listening. Personally, these interviews are providing me a time to reflect on my week as a parent. Let me know if anything stood out for you during the chat. As a new pod on the block, yes, dad jokes are welcome here, it would be great if you could look out for us and share this episode with someone that you think may be interested. While you're at it, why not head to our socials and show some love with a like, follow, or comment. Keep an eye out for the next pod drop. Big thanks to Stilo Media for producing this piece of art we call Sounding Board Parenting. From my heart to yours, I hope you are making progress on something you love and something that makes you feel alive. Remember, this can go anywhere.